Hey everybody, my name is Mike Gibb. I run accountsrecovery.net and I'm excited to welcome you to today's webinar on how to handle negotiating payments with a consumer. Getting a consumer on the phone is no easy feat, but negotiating a payment can be a far more difficult task today. Today, a panel of experts from the credit and collection industry are here to share their tips and techniques to help collectors improve their negotiation skills. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Arbyte Software. You'll get the chance to hear about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about accountsrecovery.net, the site I run. Accountsrecovery.net is a news and information platform for the RM industry. I publish unique and curated content, maintain a number of email newsletters, host webinars like this one, and offer a number of exciting podcasts for the RM industry. The site is free for anyone to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. At least my mother tells me that. I hope everyone will spend a few minutes every day checking out what it's got to offer. Now let me take a second and tell you a little bit about today's speakers. LaDonna Bowling is the Chief Compliance Officer at Contract Callers in Augusta, Georgia. She has decades of experience in first and third-party collections, focusing on utilities, telecom, and medical. She's very active with the Georgia Collectors Association, a member of Inside Arms Compliance Professionals Forum, and is a certified instructor for ACA International. She also holds the Credit and Collection Compliance Officer designation, as well as the International Fellowship of Certified Collection Executives designation with ACA International. Donna was the 2016 recipient of ACA International's Kurt Swirsky Award for Outstanding Leader in the Credit and Collection Industry. She believes it's her mission to educate the public on the importance of the collection industry and has stated numerous times that the collection industry is one of the most underappreciated industries in the nation. Christian Lair is the Chief Operating Officer for Healthcare Collections, LLC, a third-party collection agency in Phoenix, Arizona. Christian is also the Arizona Unit Director for ACA International and a former president of the Phoenix West Rotary Club. Kelly Parsons O'Brien is the president of Pacific Credit Services, formerly known as Credit Bureau Associates. Kelly's a third-generation debt collector and has worked for the family business for 26 years. She's got a passion for collections and has spent most of her career working with the collections department and helping collectors reach their best potential. Dave Reeder is certified by the American Collectors Association and ACA International as a credit and collections compliance officer and is the chief compliance officer for Finance System Incorporated. Dave's been in the accounts receivable industry for more than 20 years and his experience spans skip tracing to compliance. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded and recording will be made available later today on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, I wanted to ask everyone to take a minute and fill out a survey that should pop up on your screen after the webinar is over. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. The survey will give you a chance to share some feedback about the speakers and the topic for today, but also ask you for ideas on other topics you want to see addressed in upcoming webinars. And that information helps me make sure that the content I'm delivering to you is as relevant and useful as possible. So please take a minute and fill that out when you get a chance. With that, the introductory portion of the webinar has concluded, and I'm going to bring in our panel now to start our discussion. We're talking today about negotiations, so the first question is, obviously, what are some of your best tricks at helping teach collectors to be better negotiators? And LaDonna will give you the honor of answering the first question today.
Well, thank you, Mike. I think that one of the best tricks is to teach the collectors to gather their info. No, we don't have a lot of time before an account pops up to us to review every note, but, you know, look at your account, know your client, know what the balance is, know how long you're going to have the account. So if you know your product, then you'll understand what type of deal you should be, you know, trying to work towards. So if it's a client that you only have for an account for 60 days, you know that you need to get a payment plan that's going to get done within 60 days. You need to approach the situation. I believe we teach them with a win-win attitude. Sometimes people look at negotiation as there can only be one winner. So don't approach it with that mindset. Approach it with a win-win mindset so the consumer's going to win something and you're going to win something. That kind of helps build trust.
Absolutely. We were always taught that it was called a WIFM, a W-I-I-F-M. What's in it for me? When you're negotiating with that consumer, give them a selling point. What's in it for them? Resolving this account so that they can also win from the negotiation.
I also think...
go ahead, Kelly.
Well, I was just going to say that I think that the frame of mind of your collector is one of the bigger tricks in our office, is keeping that positive frame of mind and also keeping the call positive. So, you know, sometimes the consumers call in and are upset and frustrated, and I think that if we can get them to a positive frame of mind, it's a lot easier to negotiate with them. And so that's one of the things that the collector, we talk a lot for our collectors about, is building rapport, maybe telling a little joke, kind of lightening the mood so that you can even get into a place of negotiation. And so that's kind of one of our tricks that we help our collectors.
Yeah, and I'll echo what was said earlier about knowing what your... I always tell my collectors they're the worst kind of telemarketers, because they want people to pay them and they're not selling them a product or a service. It's already been rendered and they're just trying to convince them to pay what they've already received. So we always take the approach that we're selling peace of mind. We're selling a resolution to something that, because we only deal with medical debts, we would always argue that these are people who want to pay, they just can't. They would like to resolve it. They didn't expect this debt. They didn't incur it in a way that was irresponsible. As my stepdad always said, no one ever overspent on their heart attack. So we want to take that approach that these are people who want to pay, and we need to find a way to help them get there, whether it's through a payment plan, a payment in full, or through a settlement that our client has authorized.
Good point.
Excellent. Kristen, this is something that I wanted to ask you, because before the webinar started, this is something you brought up with respect to training collectors to be better negotiators. I know you've got an interesting take on that. So I wondered if you could just spend a minute talking about how to train collectors and some of the difficulties maybe that agencies will come across when doing that.
Certainly. As I mentioned before we started, one of my largest frustrations is finding a number of my collectors being very successful at getting people to pay debts, but having completely diametrically opposed approaches in how they do it. And as I said, as sort of a logically, analytically minded person, it drives me up a wall, because it doesn't allow me to have a one-size-fits-all training program. I can't say, if you follow these five steps, you will be a successful collector. Ultimately, what it led me to realize and work with instead of against is that the collector has to find their voice. If they are a fast-talking, aggressive person, they have to understand that's going to have an effect on the debtor that they're speaking with. It may not be the effect they're looking for, but they can't be told your entire personality is wrong. And I think that's part of how to negotiate for, or how to train for negotiating with these debtors, is you've got to make sure you've got the right person in the position. It isn't for everyone. But once you get them there, you've got to make sure that they find their voice and they work with it, not against it. Customizing the training for our people, while we have our, you know, compliance standards and our client standards that were given to us, we give our collectors a lot of freedom in being able to work within that framework, that compliance and requirement framework, without a whole lot of restrictions. We've also learned that you may have 2 minutes with one collector and they are ready to get the payment or ready to get the payment plan. There are others who may take 5 or 6 or even 8 or 10, which may seem significant. But again, because we're dealing with medical debts, there are often a lot of questions, a lot of concern, or a lot of just wanting to avoid discussing it, an embarrassment level. And if it takes that amount of time, because when you're talking about higher balances especially, you've got to give your collectors freedom to work towards that end. You can't just tell them after 3 minutes, I need you off the phone, you're wasting time.
So Kristen, when you have people and you're teaching them to, you know, discover their telephone personality, their approach, et cetera, how do you regulate quality assurance to grade and to understand that? Because sometimes I find that they're a little rigid, you know, when the collectors get into a little freestyle, if you will.
For us, it comes down to having the collectors as they're training, spend a lot of time with other collectors and sort of doing the dual phone where they can listen in. We have yet to find a way to get them comfortable with what's being said, what's being asked, other than just having them do it, having them be the fly on the wall, having them be the sort of ancillary person who is listening to everything that goes on. And once we finish with that, we then have them reverse the position so that the collector who they've listened to or trained with is on the other end of the line, available, sitting right next to them, so that they can assist them if they get into a bit of a conundrum they're not sure how to handle. But it really is just time. We have our compliance and our PPMS documents available to everyone all the time, and they can look it up, and they certainly get a lot of training on that. But the bulk of our time is just having them listening and then taking calls.
You know, and one of the things that when you mentioned it earlier, we didn't really have a lot of time to talk about it. But what I was thinking about is that as a negotiator, for you to be successful, you're going to have lots of tools in your tool belt. And so what we do a lot of times is, if I have collectors, when you're listening to their calls, they're really struggling with, like, you know, maybe like a driver personality, right? They're not strong enough to handle that. What we do is we have them listen to collectors that are more successful with those personalities so that they can kind of learn things from them, and then they can kind of make it their own, like you said, find their own voice. But we really found that going through, like when we're doing our call reviews and our speech analytics, to identify these calls that help collectors that aren't doing as well there, right? So each collector kind of has their own voice, but if we can give them more tools to handle the people that they don't communicate as effectively with, we find that their overall success increases.
So telling them to adjust their personalities based on the other person's personality. So, you know, I'm an aggressive driving type person. So you can leave your niceties, you know, and save them for somebody else. I want to get to the point. And sometimes I find that collectors find that type of personality abrasive, and it kind of puts them on the defense. And I think that that is critical, Kelly, teaching people how to deal with the different personality types.
Absolutely. And part of our training program is that the collectors get to be the consumers. So during our first few days of role playing and getting ready to get on the phone, we actually call out to the collection floor, and the collector gets to be the consumer. And they really like that, because they get to give the new collector like a little taste of, you know, the positive and the negative, and kind of a little overview. So and it also gives our collectors a little way to be involved in the training and give feedback, saying, like, you know, I think you did really well on this call, this part of the call, but this would really help you, because the collectors sometimes know it better than our trainers. You know, I mean, they're doing it all day long, and tapping into that resource, I think, is really valuable.
Yeah,
I agree. That's one of the reasons we ask our collectors to spend some time allowing the new hires and the trainees to sit with them, and they, you know, they take pride in it as well. It's something that really helps the morale of the company when your employees are told, we think you would be a good example for this person to follow. We would like for them to shadow you so that they can learn from you. Don't underestimate the amount of pride people take in their, as LaDonna says, an underappreciated group who is told routinely throughout the course of the day that they don't want to talk to you, and they're not going to pay you, and they hate you and all the other nasty things they say. To tell them, despite all of that, you do such a good job, we want this person to listen to you and learn from you. It has that extra benefit.
I've got a
do the same thing, and we tell everybody, even in training, that, you know, this is just the beginning. We use the tool analogy, just like Kelly said, that, you know, I'm giving you a tool belt in training, and I'm going to put some specific tools in your tool belt, but you have to do the monitoring, the shadowing with an experienced collector. And you will develop your own voice. As long as you check the major boxes that have to be checked in our phone calls,
okay,
you will develop your own voice.
Well, let's do a panel poll. You know, we're all, you know, we have different styles, but we're all, I think, very effective and very successful at what we do. What do you think the most important component of being an effective negotiator is, and why? Who wants to go first?
Listening. Yeah, that's number one on my list.
And
I'd vote for that as well.
And that's the very first thing on my list, because, you know, If we're not listening, we're not focused, we're going to miss some type of, you know, covert signals that the consumer might be trying to convey to us, you know, things that, you know, unless we are effectively listening, we're definitely going to miss. You know, if you miss the signals, you can turn what could be a productive negotiation opportunity to a mismatch or misunderstandings, if you will. And I always teach this. Most of the time, people are listening to respond and not listening to understand. What do y'all think about that? I didn't coin that phrase, but I think it's just so true.
Absolutely. And I would agree. Yeah, I think that finding the listening really, I think, helps the collector identify the driving factor. So whatever the consumer has a driving factor, right? They're trying to clean up credit, you know, get out from underneath their bills, all the things that we know people call us for, or when we talk to them on an outbound call, why they want to negotiate and work with us. And so I think that a lot of times when the collectors don't listen to those little key factors, they miss that driving factor and they can't really effectively negotiate from the consumer's perspective, which is so key. And I think if we look at all of our most successful collectors and the ones that negotiate the highest payments, they often are negotiating from the consumer's perspective. And I think that's really key.
Yeah. And I think that sometimes it's a misnomer that they think that the person controlling the conversation is the person who talks the most, you know, and I try to teach our collectors that, you know, you can control the conversation with just going, I see, I hear, tell me more. And you don't have to be the most, you know, talkative one on the call.
Excellent. Well, we're off to an awesome start. I just want to pause the discussion briefly and say a few words about the sponsor of today's webinar. That's Arbyte Software. Arbyte Software offers a full suite of productive and straightforward contact software built for agencies with high outbound call volume. If you sign up for their powerful broadcast dialer, office phone system, or TCPA compliant manual dialing solution during the month of May, you'll receive 6 months of RCIs free. Please call 1-844-444-4401 for more information. Just to repeat that number, 844-444-4401. You can also find Arbyte online at arbytesoftware.com, and that's Arbyte spelled A-R-B-E-I-T, arbytesoftware.com. Thanks again, Arbyte, for sponsoring today's webinar and for your continued support of the credit and collection industry. I also want to just address, we got a couple of questions that have come in, so it's a chance for me to remind everybody, if you have a question for any of the panelists or for all of the panelists, please type it into the Q&A button or Q&A panel on your Zoom webinar control panel, and we'll try and get to it. The first question, does anyone on the panel teach agents to utilize anything besides a time over money step down when negotiating with a consumer? Does anyone want to take that?
That sounds like a Christian answer.
You could do it to her later, Christian. How's that?
No, that's not a problem. You know, honestly, I'm not sure. I've not used a time over money approach, and quite frankly, not familiar with it, I guess, in this sense here for negotiating. For us, again, we're looking to, we use a lot of techniques that I think are similar to salespeople. We really are trying to sell that peace of mind. We're trying to sell the resolution and the no longer having to have to deal with this outstanding debt, and taking the approach that people want to pay. They just haven't figured out how, and our role is to help them figure out how to pay, whether it is through payments, through money given to them by friends or family or some sort of other efforts, or in our case, if an insurance company should have paid more, we work with them to try to resolve it through that insurance company's lack of payment. We look for the options that they may not have considered or just put out of their mind because they just want to put the whole debt out of their mind.
What we focus on in our office is I always tell the collector, use whatever number smaller. You know, I mean, if we're going to talk about, you know, a $25 payment or 3 months, 6 months. So we don't really do time over money. We more focus on what's the smaller amount of money that we're, or what's the smaller number that we're going to be talking about with the consumer to try to keep it, I don't know, kind of in an idea of making it sound like less. So one of the phrases the collectors will use is it a ridiculous idea to get this taken care of in 5 months or 6 months or 3 months? So kind of make it sound like, you know, you don't, I feel like giving the consumer the feel like they really have control over this and then walking them in the direction that we want them to is where we are most successful.
Okay, that works. Another question. You mentioned keeping the collectors in the frame of mind of selling a resolution or peace of mind to the consumer in regards to medical debt. What about collecting on loan debt? What are your suggestions on how to approach consumers with past due loan accounts without violating any sort of compliance regulation and keeping the conversation positive?
We do quite a bit of loan. So we work for many local credit unions. And so one of the things that many of them want is to go back and get more loans or open their bank account back up with the credit union or bank in the area. So that's kind of a motivating factor as well. I also feel like we kind of have a joke in our office, like set the consumers free, right? Like set them free of this burden. And I you know, I've talked to so many people in the years of collecting that everybody that owns a loan or credit card or, you know, owes money, they have this financial burden, this thing laying on top of them that many times they just don't feel like they can get out from. And so similar to medical debt, it's about finding the solution and helping them see that there is a way out of this thing that they've done to themselves, because I think there's a lot of guilt involved in, you know, in the repossessions or loans or credit cards where they realize they did it to themselves and they just don't know how to get out of it. And so I think that really having the collector be sympathetic or empathetic to the situation they've gotten themselves into, and through education, help them see that there are options and ways for them to get out of that financial burden they've put themselves in.
And I think that letting them know that you work with people who are in situations like this every day, where circumstantial things happen, you know, it happens to everybody. And, you know, showing them the light at the end of the tunnel that, you know, working together, you can get it resolved.
I have my top collector always tells people, this is temporary. What you're going through is temporary. This is getting better. You know, by you making this phone call or by you talking to me today, you're moving in the right direction. And people really need that encouragement. I think that many people live in a life where they don't really get that encouragement, especially as an adult. We don't always get encouragement from outside sources. And I feel like if the collector can provide that encouragement, the consumer is much more likely to work with them.
Well, I think going hand in hand with that, there are very few people who will willingly talk about their finances, especially if they're in bad shape. So you're dealing with a person who has probably kept this a secret from quite possibly their entire family. And there are times where that listening, giving them that few minutes to just talk about it and talk about their frustrations, really puts them in a great frame of mind to be willing to negotiate. Because they've not been able to confess or discuss this with anyone for months or sometimes even years.
And to Kelly's point, you know, using positive, strong language is preferred. You know, like I like to tell people to avoid your weak language, like, you know, I hate to ask for this, or would you consider the possibility of? And I think if you rephrase those questions in a more positive manner, it makes the consumer feel better. And just let me throw in, I also hate those disclaimers where the reps start out with, legally, I must tell you this. I'm like, well, you're setting the consumer up to be mad now talking about legal.
Another poll question here. A question came in out of curiosity. Do any of your offices negotiate with pay to delete?
Due to the fact that there may be people listening that I'm not aware of, I cannot answer that.
All right. Another question, moving on quickly. What are your key techniques for de-escalation during a call? Maybe tensions are getting a little high. How do you recommend that the collector sort of take things down a notch or two? Dave, we haven't heard from you in a little bit. What do you say?
Well, you're always going to potentially have some personality conflicts. Not every collector is going to get along with every consumer. Sometimes a different voice can make all the difference in de-escalating that. You know, obviously they should do their best and really be positive. I'm just trying to help you. I'm trying to help you out of a bad situation if you would just allow me to do that. If that doesn't work, sometimes maybe we need to pass that call off and let it go to a second voice that there might not be that personality conflict, because you do have people that are developing their own voice. They're developing their own way, and they're just have that inherent conflict sometimes. So talk them down, you know, really reassure them that I'm just really trying to help you. And if we work together, we can, you know, get you out from under this.
You know, I know I've said this several times, but that Mary Shore words that work, we implemented it almost 2 years ago, and I would say that we're much better at using it today than we were 2 years ago. But every now and again, you'll hear the collectors kind of, their voice increases. You can tell they're in the battle mode. And all I'll do is type, we have an instant message system, and I'm like, are you using your words that work? And sure enough, they turn those calls right around. And it's really amazing what that program that she's shared with us does for our office, because we have very few irate or escalated callers throughout the month. It's pretty impressive how much we've reduced that. And I really do think that it allows for the consumer really to hear that you're trying to help them, and really taps into that kind of like place where we're trying to get them calm and back on the same page.
And I think that when a consumer, you know, seems to be verbally combative and they're just coming at you with everything, I actually phrase that as verbal vomit. Let them get it out, acknowledge their feelings, because those are their feelings and they're real to them and they just want someone to hear them. And, you know, once they've said it, you acknowledge it and you move on.
Yeah, and I think where we get to the point of someone feels like it's personal. So the collector is trying to work through the process. The person wants something that they can't offer. You know, they want to make a deal that we just can't accept. They start to take it personal, so that collector is personally rejecting them. And I'm sure everyone's heard this 1,000 times. You won't work with me. We've named a number of our collectors as team leads, and we find that telling that debtor, let me have you speak to my supervisor, and that team lead is going to say the exact same thing. Tell them those are the rules. We can't deviate from that. Our client won't allow it. The law won't allow it. Is one of the ways when they get to the high level, if the collector can't get the debtor sort of off the ledge, if you will, making extensive use of that. When someone hears, oh, it's a supervisor, so it's not a personal slam against me. They're not personally rejecting me. It's a policy that can't be deviated from. In addition to helping to resolve those calls or getting some payments even, it really helps us to avoid the lawsuits, because the people are heard. They are heard, and they're now not feeling like they're being discriminated against because they can't pay $1 a month on their $20,000 bill.
Okay, moving on. Our next question, a lot of questions coming in today. First of all, Kelly, make sure you've got a commission arrangement set up, because a couple of questions have come in about words that work, and that is offered by, her name is Mary Shores, S-H-O-R-E-S. She has a collection agency in Illinois, Mid-State Collection Solutions, I think it's called, but her program is called Words That Work. We've done webinars with her before. Another question, this one came in from for you, LaDonna, just clarifying, how do you avoid starting a collection call without stating the legally required mini Miranda disclaimer?
You can say it, but I was talking more or less about those collectors who feel the need to put a disclaimer up before the disclaimer, like, you know, legally I must tell you this. You know, I teach our staff to just roll into the mini Miranda after they've, you know, right party identified. Roll into this is an attempt to collect a debt by a debt collector. Any information obtained will be used for that purpose. Now, the purpose of my call is, and I find that they lose it with the consumer. The consumer, you know, automatically starts thinking negative things when they insert things like, I must tell you this, according to the law. That's what I was talking about when I was talking about disclaimers.
The pre-disclaimer disclaimer.
Yeah, the pre-disclaimer disclaimer. I think it's weak language, and it's almost like we're trying to validate ourselves before we've validated ourselves.
And we like when we're doing our questions, you know, like call with an auto dialer, you know, employment information, updated address, like a lot of people like get kind of like angry and kind of frustrated, which kind of takes us off our positivity game. And so a lot of times I'll just say, oh, our system prompts me to get through this so that I can update your account and get through the next. So really just like giving the consumer a reason why you're doing something often puts them at ease. And so I agree with LaDonna. We just say it. We just give them the mini Miranda. It takes like what, 1 or 2 seconds to give it. And yeah. Then with the any time of the questions where you're trying to get through that compliance stuff, we just tell them, oh, our system prompts me to say it. I appreciate your patience. Thanks so much. Let's get to resolving your account. So that's really helped us quite a bit in kind of overcoming that.
And when you're talking about words that work, you know, I like to teach our people to use inclusive language, words like we, let's, us, you know, let's work together. Let's update your file to see what we can work out. And then that kind of puts it not in a you versus them situation, but a, hey, we're in this together. You know, we're going to work it out. You know, we'll find out what's in it for you.
Great idea.
Well, let's all move on to our next question. What if the money is just not there when going over their expenses?
Well, you know, it's funny. I wrote down on my notes, I was like, focus on what the consumer can afford and what they're willing and not what they're willing to give up, because there's a big difference. And so I think that that's really when you're going over the finances with consumers, trying to figure out where there is actually money. I mean, I think that there's definitely a percentage of people we collect from, especially in the medical arena, that truly don't have an ability to pay the money back. And I don't think that's where your collectors should be focused on. You know, I mean, clearly they're going to ask for the money and they're going to spend some time negotiating, looking for resources, family members, things like that. But most people have some money they can give away for things. My mom taught me a long time ago that you want to be before the cable bill. And if you can get before the cable bill, you'll almost always get paid. And so those are the things that we think about is, you know, all of these kind of things that we believe are necessities of life, like Wi-Fi and cable and Netflix and Hulu. But this is all money that, you know, with for the right reasoning, and if people like me, may be more likely to give up so that they can get this account taken care of. It's just a matter of your collectors building that rapport and making this important enough that they will give up that stuff for a period of time to get into a better financial situation.
Agreed. I think everybody's got something they can pay, but, and I think those are the exceptions and not the norm. You always run into that one consumer who just, you know, every which way they look at it, they can't even spare $10, or that's all they can spare, is put them on a hardship plan. You know, we tell consumers, you know, you qualify for a hardship plan, and this is what we'll do. We'll put you on this minimum payment for 3 months, 6 months, and at that point, I'm sure your circumstances are going to get better, and we can reevaluate you. Sometimes that works.
We do the same thing. We'll have a hardship plan where it's just a shorter term minimal payment, and then we can reevaluate when the situation changes.
Yeah, and I think that comes down to what Kelly is saying about a positive mentality. We have to believe that people want to pay their bills, and we just have to show them how.
Yeah, I think the other big thing for the negotiating that often gets overlooked is you have to know when to walk away. If you've gone through all of these steps and the money isn't there, walking away with a positive attitude and having the debtor walk away with a positive attitude, even if it didn't get resolved on that call, gives you an opportunity in a few days, in a few weeks, or even in a few months, if you have the account that long, to go back to them. So much like the hardship plan, sometimes the money just isn't there today. Let's not put that bad taste in their mouth and make them not want to take your call. this is something that you can't handle today. You know, we understand that. We'll try again in a week. Let's see if you could take a look, you know, a harder look at your finances. Let's see if we can work together next week to figure out a way to at least start getting this resolved.
So in other words, you're saying don't end the call with the collection process will continue.
Well, you know, like you said, with the disclaimers, certainly letting them know what the consequences will be, but saying it in a way that is not, you know, going to make them not take your call ever again.
Yeah. Right.
Making sure that you leave that door open. I want to work with you. I know I can't work with you today. That doesn't mean I can't work with you next week or in a couple of weeks or once you get your next paycheck. When is that? Let's talk then.
Well, we call it like planting a seed, right? So the idea is that we plant the seed of like, you know, three or four sources of money that we'd like to have them go out, kind of give them like a homework project and then set that specific follow-up date. So instead of like next week, how about next Thursday at 4 o'clock, I'll give you a call. You'll be off work by then. You could have, you know, reached out to SoFi.com for a loan or LoanMe.com. You can
certainly
talk to your relatives, go, you know, look in the garage and see if a garage sale might not be a bad idea. You know, plant a couple of things that they're supposed to be working on between now and when we talk to them again.
And that's putting the expectation back on them. You know, you're not being too forceful or aggressive, but that's putting a little expectation in their lap.
And the collectors always say, well, would it be reasonable if you did this for me while I went ahead and reviewed your account with my manager over the next week to see if there's anything I missed that you might qualify for? And would it be reasonable for you to do this for me and us talk again on Thursday at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock or whatever?
And you find a lot of people are receptive to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like, we were listening to a call yesterday in call reviews, and, you know, and the guy, like, I could tell from the very first, like, hello, he was not interested in the call, and it was a newer collector, and she just couldn't understand why he didn't answer when she called him back. And I was like, well, because you didn't give him a project. You didn't, like, you left it like, oh, we'll talk tomorrow, and you can make your payment. Well, there's really no reason he couldn't have made his payment today, right? So, I don't think it's going to work every time, just like every collection technique we try. But I do think that if somebody's willing to take, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, even 5 or 6 minutes to talk to you, I think that there's some interest in resolving the account. And it may be a temporary interest, right? It may be like, hey, I'm interested right now. And when I hang up the phone, now I'm interested in something else. But many people, I really think they just need that hand. They need somebody to reach out to them and help them. And that's at least the way that we train our staff.
Agreed.
How aggressive do you want your collectors to be when negotiating with individuals? I mean, obviously you're trying to get them to make a payment. You're starting with sort of payment in full or balance in full and sort of working down, but how aggressive or persistent do you want your collectors to be when they're on the phone with somebody?
It's assertive, not aggressive.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Good, LaDonna. I was like, aggressive is not the best word here, Mike.
Agreed.
Yeah, okay. I don't think we've wanted aggressive in a long, long time.
Yeah. But I think to your point is we want them to be firm, right? Firm and fair. I think we don't want them to leave money on the table. I think it's a matter of, you know, one of the things we were working a little bit of a hard file this last week, and I was listening to a couple collector calls, and I could tell that they hadn't been paid money all day. And so as soon as somebody's offering $100, even on a very large account, they're like, okay, let's take it. You know, and so I think that what's important is that the collector remains firm throughout the day or throughout the calls. And I think that comes from the positive mental attitude, that comes from your managers out on the floor, reminding them, you know, if, in hindsight, I probably should have realized at like 11 or 12 that they were working some hard accounts and they probably needed a little more encouragement. So I think from a manager perspective, it's important for us to remind them throughout the day that even if they're having a rough day or lots of no's, it doesn't mean that just because you're going to get an offer of money that you're going to take it and stop negotiating. But I do find that that sometimes happens with the collector. So I think that they have to be firm and they do need to be aware that if they're saying yes too soon, then they are leaving money on the table, which affects everybody's totals, right? It affects money out of their pocket as well.
So is that another sort of negotiating strategy? Never take the first offer? Does that kind of sort of fit in with that, with what you're saying there?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we do is, you know, we focus on the fact that the balance is in full is due, right? That's the reason why it was sent to collections. And then also try to get them to qualify for something. Sometimes we may end up back at that $100, but I think that it's important for the collector to, you know, acknowledge that they're offering something. I think that's really important. And then really, sometimes it's about explaining to the consumer what the collector's job is, right? So it's about trying to recover this account quickly for our clients, which then in turn benefits you, because then you don't have to pay on it as long. You know, if there's interest, it's likely going to save you money. Really showing them, I think, what's in it for them, right? So I think that you do have to be cautious. The other thing is I don't think that it hurts you to put the first dollar out. I've got a little bit of a sensitive spot for older people. So a lot of times, even our regular payers, if, you know, I can tell that this is going to take them forever to pay this off, but if I can offer them, you know, $50 or $100 off the interest on an account that's really old, and they'll get it paid off, I get to quit talking to the grandma for 5 or 6 minutes once a month, and, you know, and we quit posting the payment, the client's done with the account. So I don't think there's a hard, fast answer for that, Mike, but I do think that it's important for the collector not to just like arbitrarily come up with a number and just say, oh, let's pay 500, right? There needs to be a reason why we're making our offers.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lynn.
I was just going to add a point that I think that we need to caution the collectors on not saying no when the consumer throws out that low ball offer, because we all know as soon as you tell the consumer no, there's going to be like one of your childhood buddies that are going to take their toys, go home, and not play with you anymore. And they'll see you on caller ID and say, forget them. They told me no.
Yep.
Good point. Well, my question to the panel here is, for those who offer discounts, one, are your discounts dictated by your clients? For us, all of ours are. And two, how do you train your collectors to offer those discounts? Is it a step system, or how do you have them do that?
So most of our clients allow us to negotiate a portion of the debt, like a blanket type settlement amount. And then what I've done is I've given my collectors a small portion of that authority. So, you know, if I know I can waive 25% of the account, then I give them 5%. I figure if I can get that account paid off quickly, and usually 5% is not a lot, but it gives the collector something as simple as like rounding the account down a few dollars, right? And so it gives the collector a little bit of authority, and then also allows for the collector to blame any other no's on anything lower on management, and then they don't have to really take the responsibility for any future no's in that conversation. So that's the way that we've done it. The other thing that we implemented is all of our settlements, before we would turn them in and like call the consumer back. So now we what we call our BOP system, and I have 3 or 4 people on staff that are authorized to negotiate settlements to a point, and then anything else gets turned in. But the idea is that then the consumer's on the phone with the money, and if we can make it work, let's get the money right now.
The majority of our clients, they don't really accept settlements. We do have some consumers that will offer a settlement. We take that offer back to them and let them approve it. We put that actually back on the client at our shop.
Well, you know, and the biggest thing that we deal with on our settlement offers is, well, you bought the account, you paid pennies on the dollar. And that's a real big conversation. So what I was finding is our collectors would say stuff like, the consumer wouldn't even ask about it. And they would just say, well, we don't buy our account, so you need to pay this. Well, some consumers don't even know what buying an account means, right? So we're having to pull that out of the conversation. I'm like, well, if the consumer's, you know, talking about it, fine, you can acknowledge, you know, correct them. But if they're not asking for it, don't volunteer it, because now you've confused the consumer.
Yeah. And Kelly, I like your approach with removing the responsibility from the collector. We do that both for our settlements and also for our payment plans. We actually built a system for our collectors where if someone wants to make a series of payments, you know, make a payment arrangement, we don't tell them what's acceptable and what isn't. They have to punch in, how much can you pay a month? I need a down payment, a good faith payment to show that you're going to continue to make payments. And if they plug it in and the system says that's not acceptable, it takes that pressure off of the collector. It's not the collector's fault. And I think that is one plus when you're negotiating. I have no control over this. Even if you ask my manager or the owner of the company, that's the way the system is set up and I can't deviate from it. That will help, at least it's helped our collectors immensely, because it really short circuits that 5-minute argument over, why can't you do it? Why don't you like me? Please do this. You're being mean. It's out of my hands. It's the way the system's set up, or it's what the client has dictated to us. We can't deviate from that.
Yeah, I don't like the collectors that start out offering the settlement without even trying to get, you know, a feel for the consumer. Hey, I can give you 50% off today. What do you think about that? You know, what if they could have paid the whole thing?
Yeah. Yeah, always balance in full for us, too. I think that you really got to drum into your collectors. That's where everything should start.
I agree. Right off the bat, balance in full is what to do.
But I also think those probing questions, like, you know, tell me more about what makes you call in today, or I know I'll be able to assist you if you can tell me more about your plan, right? Because every consumer that calls has a plan, especially if they're the ones driving the negotiation. But if the collector doesn't even have an idea that, you know, we do apartment debt, and so I know that if their driving force is they're trying to move, then I can collect more money because they have a bigger driving force than somebody that's just simply trying to pay an old debt.
What are some of those other probing questions that you can ask, that you can have collectors ask during conversations with individuals to help get the information you're looking for, to sort of help kind of keep moving that conversation along?
Sure, Mike. Where are you working now?
I have no idea.
And how often are you paid?
How often am I paid? Not often enough.
I know, right? What about your spouse?
You know, one of my favorite is where's this money coming from? Did you win the lottery? And it often catches them off guard a little bit. They, you know, we can have like a little joke about, you know, wouldn't that be nice? And but then often they'll give you exactly what you're trying to work on. Like, you know, grandma gave me the money, I've saved it up, whatever the answer is. But also that joke really creates that positive environment and really is so important for an effective negotiation, is that you've built rapport with the caller.
Another question, what is another way to say no when not accepting a payment arrangement?
Well, they always redirect. Say, you know, acknowledge the payment that they're offering. Let them know, you know, that would be a good start, but to put this into a payment plan, I would need to be at X dollars, and try to do a smooth upsell.
So we like to, you know, if they offer like $50, which would require the account to be paid off, let's say in 10 months, but we're trying to shoot for 6 months, then maybe something similar, you know, after you've probed them a little bit, is something saying like, well, you know, just for another $20 a month, we can cut your payment time down by half. Would that be valuable to you? Would that be something that would help you? Because oftentimes we are really arguing over $15, $20, $30 a month. I mean, really, when we're talking about these payment arrangements, sometimes we're arguing about such a small amount that if we can put it in a different term for the consumer, they often will be more responsive. I also like to tell them when they offer a payment arrangement that's going to take them 65 months, I'm like, do you really want to be dealing with this for the next five plus years? I'm like, you know, this, I can't imagine that this is going to be, you know, me letting you make payments on this for 5 years does really no benefit to you. And I would hate to put you in a position where you're going to be paying this for 5 years. And so sometimes when you respond with a no, it's really about bringing to their attention that what they're asking for really does no benefit for them.
But let's say it's a situation where there's no interest accruing on the account, how do you sort of convince them that paying it off over 5 years isn't in their best interest? Is it a credit reporting situation at that point to try and convince them?
I look at it as more of like responsibility. Like like any time that I'm going to be making any type of loan payment, right? Like even my car loan. Well, yeah, the bank will do a 6-year car loan, but do I really want to be paying on a car for 6 years? Like I, you know, and yeah, it may cost me a little bit more for 3 years, right? Or 4 years, but overall, I'm not going to be having this burden or this payment that's going to tie up this money for that long, right?
Yeah, I get it. Most of the conversations we've had so far today, we've been focusing very much on the carrot, you know, the incentive to getting paid off, the incentive to paying off a debt, things like that. Are there situations where using the stick instead works as a better negotiating tool, or is that something that is sort of completely frowned upon these days from a negotiation standpoint?
If you have authority to use the stick, you know, and I'm assuming you're meaning consequences, you know, if it's appropriate to throw the consequences out there, if there are any, but, you know, in our shop, there's very little consequences that we can even share because our clients are moving, you know, their portfolios in and out of agencies so quickly, you know, from early out prime, seconds, terse, you know, warehouse to where, you know, there is no stick, so to speak. So it's pretty much, you know, left to true negotiations with the carrot, you know, call me Bugs Bunny, I want the carrot.
Well, and I think your sticks, if you use them like a stick as opposed to just notifying of consequences, there's a big difference because you've ended any sort of rapport you've built when you make a threat. Telling them the consequences of their actions seems to be it goes a little better, and you're still getting the same message across and you're still letting them know. But training the collectors, the difference between revealing consequences and making threats is a big thing that people often have a tough time distinguishing when they're in the heat of the moment.
Good point.
Yeah, I think it's always works better with the carrot personally. I think you're right. You do lose all rapport, any negotiation, anything you would have built up to that point. When you start saying, well, you know what, if you don't take care of this, this is what can happen. I think you've lost it all and you're going to be starting all over again.
Or you're just never going to talk to them again. You know, it's hard enough to get them on the phone, and that's the last time you will.
Well, and that's that first, last, and only. We trained our collectors. Almost every one of them has a post-it flow on the top of their monitor because it's just so important for us, especially, you know, with people not answering their phones because they just don't want to, that if they've got them on the phone, they have to be successful because, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to talk to them again.
Another question. In your opinion, how many follow-up calls to the same consumer who requested a callback saying they'll pay is enough till you pass it over?
I guess it depends on the balance, right? I mean, I might make a few extra calls for a $10,000 balance compared to a $100 balance. One of the things that our collectors have been doing a lot more of is making sure that the consumer has our website when we get off the phone. Or we're sending a text message that has a link to our website that allows them to make their payment right there. And we've found that a lot of times we'll call them and they won't answer, but they'll make their payment online. It reminds them like, hey, this is Kelly. And they're like, oh yeah, I got to pay that. And then they'll take care of it. So I think that it's important for us as collectors to make sure that if we're going to let the caller go, that they have another option to pay us other than just answering our call. Because if we call them and we happen to call them at work while we're at work, that may be inconvenient for them. But if they have an option to reach me at 6 o'clock or 10 o'clock and make the payment on their own through IVR or website, they often will be more likely to do that, to make the payment.
And awesome. Some people, based on their personality, are going to want those choices. They're going to want to choose, can I pay online, can I use? They're going to want the choices and how they pay it and when they pay it.
A question came in. What are your thoughts on negotiating over text messages? So many of our consumers don't want to talk on the phone and prefer to text. Is that something that any of you have had any experience trying?
No, that seems like it'd be a long, drawn-out process.
Yeah, we only send texts like requested statements or links to pay, so that's the only text messaging we're doing currently.
Yeah, we're not using it at all. It's a five-minute conversation, to me, seems to be a 20-minute text conversation, and it just it doesn't work, you know, it's not worth it.
You know, you'll text something like PIF now.
Oops, see, now that seems more like the stick than the carrot, though.
Yeah.
All right, we've only got a couple minutes left before we wrap up. This has been an awesome conversation. What I'd like to do is go around the panel and give you each a chance to offer any other takeaways, maybe address something you didn't get a chance to talk about but wanted to mention based on the topic today, or any other sort of summary that you want to share with the audience before we wrap up, if you don't mind. Christian, would you mind going first?
No, not at all. I think there's a lot of great information, and as always, when I speak to other awesome collection people, I learn something myself. But for us, the carrot, the rapport, the ability to find your voice and be true to it, and more than anything else, take the approach, they want to pay it. My job is to help them figure out how. Not, this is an adversarial conversation from the beginning. Getting that mindset is crucial to be able to be able to negotiate and get that payment in.
Excellent. Well said. Dave.
One of the things that I've always worked best for me is definitely my active listening. You've got to listen. They'll almost tell you exactly what you need to tell them if you listen. Build your voice and have all of your information so that you can negotiate from a position of power.
Well said. I wanted to say, I'm sorry, what did you say? But I just couldn't bring myself to do it. LaDonna, you're up.
Oh, thank you. My message would be to the managers, the supervisors, the trainers that are out there listening. We devote a lot of time to training, and with our initial training, I find that the agents are receptive and they learn the FDCPA and all those things. They learn those pretty quickly. We need to spend more time on teaching them how to negotiate and have a communication with the consumer, have a conversation. And, negotiation, everything that goes on, it's just a prelude to this one conversation, all the scrubbing and skip tracing and dialing strategies and letter strategies that we have into play that are so expensive. It all comes down to this one telephone conversation. So we need to focus a lot of our training in this area.
Excellent. Well said. Kelly.
Thank you. So I wanted to leave you with two things. So we recently, negotiation's been one of these things we've been doing a lot in our office. So we gave one of the managers 8 hours to negotiate. So the collectors all openly negotiated with the manager to get a portion or all of the 8 hours that the manager had to give away. And that was pretty impressive to kind of see the collectors when they were negotiating for something they really wanted, which is time off. So, use that how you like, and it could be a smaller amount. We wanted to really make an impact. And then when I was doing my research for this class, a quote came up, and it said, never be too sure about what you want that you won't take something better. And I think that we as managers have to be really cautious to kind of put our collectors in a box and give them the policies and procedures that are so tight that don't really give them any flexibility. One of the things we did recently was give them more flexibility on how long a settlement would be paid. If it can still be paid off this month or next month, and we can get, several thousand dollars more, wouldn't that make sense than saying like it's all due today or in 10 days? So that was one of those things that I really took away from kind of my research for this webinar. So thanks, Mike.
Awesome. I have to ask, though, the negotiating with the manager, were they each negotiating for their own 8 hours, or was it a pool of 8 hours that he was handing out? How did it work, and who won?
Yeah, so they all got to individually negotiate, and so based on their negotiation tactics, I think the one person got like 3 hours, and then almost everybody else got a portion. So some people got like an hour, a couple people got like 15 minutes because they did like a pretty good job. So, and then I think she ended up keeping like 2 hours. She just didn't give away. So it ended up only costing us 6 hours, and everybody kind of got a little bit of something. I think one person got an extra 5 minutes on their break because they weren't doing so good at the negotiation, but I know all of them walked away learning a ton.
So how, what do you know what the person who got 3 hours, how, you know, what they said or did to be so effective?
Well, they used like a lot more probing questions. One of the things that we were finding was, is the collectors that weren't negotiating as well were just asking yes or no questions. So the manager just kept saying no, 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 no. And then I think the person that got the 3 hours had kind of watched and realized that really they needed to be asking more probing questions and things like, if I could do this for you, would that help you? Questions that really they couldn't say no to, and that seemed to help.
Got it. That's very cool. I like that. Well, before I let everyone go, I want to thank LaDonna, Kelly, Christian, and Dave for their insights and their time today. Once again, the hour flew by. It was a great conversation. Thank you. I also want to thank Arbyte Software for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.arbytesoftware.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. One final reminder to please take a minute and fill out the feedback survey. That'll either pop up on your screen in a couple minutes or when you get the email tomorrow. For anyone who's interested, a recording of today's event should be posted later today to accountrecovery.net. And I hope everyone stays tuned to accountrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Panel, thank you very much. You guys all rocked it. Excellent job.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Mike, and it was super fun this time. Thank you.
Well done.